Well, there's clear water in the canals of Venice, blue skies over Delhi, and wild animals are roaming boldly in locked down cities. And while the oil industry and airlines have floundered, it has led to carbon emissions falling fast. But as lockdowns and restrictions are eased, could much of the benefit to the environment be reversed? Well, for more on this, I'm joined now by Maynooth University climatologist and emeritus professor John Sweeney. And John, I know you were on this programme at the start of the lockdown talking about the early impact of it on the environment. Where are we now 10 weeks later in terms of environmental impacts?
Well, good morning, Sarah. Yes, I think it's quite clear that notwithstanding the awful health effects we've experienced in the past 3 months, we're also experiencing the biggest drop in carbon emissions that the world has ever seen. It's bigger than the world wars, it's bigger than the Great Depression, it's bigger than the oil shocks. And we're seeing a reduction of around, probably over the course of this year, of around 7%. And that is having impacts, as you describe, in terms of biodiversity improvements. It's having impacts which are largely attributable to the drop in transportation emissions, almost exclusively, really, with some contribution from industry. And what we expect to see, I suppose, over the next year or so, is a reduction, probably for Ireland, but probably also global, of around 7%. And that's a very interesting figure because, as your previous discussion was emphasising, that's the kind of figure that we have to be encountering every year from now on till 2030 if we're to avoid the worst excesses and impacts of climate change. And, of course, even in the current drought situation, the worst drought in Eastern Ireland since 1837 is now underway. Even that kind of an extreme, we can say, has probably a fingerprint due to climate change in it. So a whole host of impacts, and those impacts, of course, for some people who are not perhaps the people affected by the awful health effects, but some people are actually experiencing nature in a new way. We've seen the wildlife explosion in our gardens. We've seen the mammals wandering around Grafton Street. And all of that is telling us that there's a resilience to nature, which, if we give it a chance, if we stop those impacts on it, then we have a fighting chance of actually recovering some of the lost ground that we have inadvertently made damage to in the past few decades. And of course, we also have to remember that some of those impacts, even from COVID, may well be traceable back to some of the increasing human impacts on animal life in some parts of the world. So there's a lot of good things coming out of it. But I think what I think is important to realise at this point in time is that we're at a crucial element and a crucial point, because crises, in a way, they're a moment of rupture, a moment of change, and social consensuses can change very quickly. I'm long enough around to remember the great smogs in Dublin in the 1980s. But with the health impact that was being detected then, the social consensus shifted overnight and we solved that problem. And I'm quite optimistic that here we are at another turning point where the social consensus about well-being, the social consensus about health over perhaps material advantage, that also is experiencing, I think, a crucial moment of decision making. Yes. And I'm very hopeful that, you know, we will come out of this terrible event with a changed perception of what matters in life and what kind of values we really prioritise down the road.
Yeah, because I it's good to hear that you're optimistic on it, but I know that history has taught us in the past, when emissions have fallen sharply, as they do during a recession, for example, there's often this rebound that wipes out any of the short-term gains from that recession. Why do you think this pandemic will be any different?
Well, I think that, you know, we face a choice here between, I suppose, going back in our bad old ways of the carbon-intensive global economy that has set us on this path towards environmental breakdown, or accelerating the transition, which I think we've already seen the green shoots of from our young people, from our Fridays for Future demonstrators, from our Greta Thunberg. We've seen that people are changing, and they're changing in terms of looking to the future, future in terms of intergenerational equity a lot more than they were in the past. So I think that, you know, we're seeing people out cycling, new relationships in terms of family values being formed. We're seeing people traveling a lot less. And I think what will come out of this is that we will see perhaps less of a need for cramming 3,000 people into a plate glass skyscraper in a city centre, and perhaps more options for satellite hubs, for hot desks, if you like, even shared by companies in regional towns, in smaller settlement units, which will be a boon, of course, for rural development in many parts of Ireland if this emerges. So the opportunity is now coming before us. The choices are now coming before us. And I think people are sensible enough now to see that we must grasp that opportunity. We must not go back down the road of subsidising the fuel-intensive, polluting industries who now are really, I suppose, looking for a bailout on a grand scale, but not offering the kind of sustainability that society now seems to be wanting in return. And government's job, as far as I can see, is to express the wishes of society that a change is now made in this area, whereby the intangible aspects of life that we perhaps have taken for granted before are now assuming more importance. The GDP is no longer the be-all and end-all of what we're doing in Ireland.
Okay, you mentioned the 7% figure and the fact that we've seen that dramatic reduction in greenhouse gases during the pandemic, which is huge. But it's also, as you said, what the Green Party is looking for here on an annual basis. The whole country's been locked down for a couple of months, and that got us a 7% reduction. So how do you achieve that in normal times when everybody isn't locked, literally locked at home in their houses?
Well, the 7% is actually not a party political demand so much as the United Nations Secretary General indicated that this is what's required to comply with the obligations that countries like Ireland signed up to under Paris. So it's a global need which has to be brought down to the national level, certainly. But all of the reductions that we've had in the past 3 months have really come from transport. Transport accounts for about 20% of our total greenhouse gas emissions. We haven't had a major contribution from agriculture, which has continued as normal. Many parts of industry and energy have continued as normal. So that burden can be shared out, and it can be, if you like, allocated in a way which ensures just transition, which ensures equity, but also which ensures a certain amount of fairness for society looking ahead. So I don't see that as an impossible task to go back 7% per year. We were there a decade or two ago. So, you know, we can get there without going back to the bad old ways of polluting industry. The renewable energy revolution is here. The changes in attitudes, I think, that I've mentioned are just about round the corner now. And although we made mistakes in the great crash of 2011 by simply ramping up things all over again the same way as before, I think society now has a slightly different view of things. And I think society will not accept going back to the bad old ways to the same extent.
And of course, the 7% reduction, even if we do manage it, that's to halt climate global warming rising or further global warming. What about reversing the damage that's been done, John? What would we need to do that, or is it even possible?
It's a long, long process. Our sea levels will continue to rise for 3 or 4 centuries. Based on what we've done to the atmosphere already. So there are some parts of the climate system which will simply not respond, even if we were to shut off our emissions tomorrow. What we can do, however, is play our part on the global stage and the global effort that we've signed up to in Paris to undo as much of the damage as possible in the long and medium term. Now, we would have to be reducing as a globe by around about 10% per annum to achieve that. And that's not beyond the wit of humankind to achieve that technologically, but it is an enormous task to do. But also, we have to adapt to what's coming down the line in Ireland itself. We have to adapt to increased flooding. We have to adapt to increased increased drought and heat waves, we have to adapt our agricultural systems and our energy systems accordingly. And that can be done to make Ireland remain a competitive country on the international stage. We just have to have the political will to do it. And that's the leadership that's required at the moment to actually grasp the nettle on that.
All right, Professor John Sweeney, thank you very much for joining us this morning.